We today are starting a new series. If you've been here with us over the past several months, you know that we have been in a series on the New Testament book of Acts, but we are pushing pause on that series. We will pick it back up in September, but today I want to start a series that's all about who we are as a church. Typically this time of year, I will do a series that's a vision series. I do it every year. A couple reasons for that. One is we tend to forget why we do the things we do. Any church, any organization, even as individuals, we will get distracted by those things that are secondary, the things that are urgent, you know, tend to be right in front of us, and they'll get our attention, and we will forget our main purpose many times. So every year, I like to go back and to revisit why we do what we do. The other reason is that we have a lot of folks that are new that have come in the last year, and maybe you're wondering, you know, well, what's the point of all of this, and what's your purpose as a church? And so every year, I try to go back and talk about these things that are primary for us, that are most important to us. So if you're visiting today, August is a great month for you to check out our church and to learn what we're all about. If you have been here for years, let me say it this way. This is something I've talked about before, but I'm doing it from a little different angle. Most of the time, I will talk about who we are as a church and why we exist and our purpose and our focus. But in this series, I want to look at it from a little bit different angle. I want us to talk about who we are as individuals. I want us to take a moment at the beginning of this new church year, at the beginning of this new school year, and to stop and really examine who we are. I mean, it's the kind of thing that typically we'll do at the beginning of a new year, but we tend to focus on some things that are fairly short term, you know, like I need to lose 10 pounds before summer, or I need to get back on an exercise program. And so we'll make some commitments about things that we need to do over the next several weeks or months and to better ourselves, to better our lives. But what I want to do in this series is to stop and to really examine our lives and to examine the long view. I mean, not just the next several weeks or months, but to examine the next several years, maybe even the next several decades, and to stop and to ask, what is it I want my future to look like? What do I want the next years of my life to look like? I mean, maybe you're a teenager in here. You're 13 or 14 years old. Take a moment and stop and picture your life 20 years from now. But what do you imagine? And if you're a teenager, maybe 20 years from now, you imagine that you're married, that you've got a couple of young kids at home, that you're working this job and you're coming home at night and you're playing with your kids and your marriage is good and you're in this job and you're successful in your job and you've got this cute house in the suburbs with three bedrooms and two baths and this nice little yard and you've got neighbors and you picture your life as good, right? I mean... No one that I know, you can go a lot of different directions with that kind of picture of your life. No one I know who is 13 or 14 years old says, well, you know, what I picture is that I'm working some menial job, you know, some night shift job. I'm living in my parents' basement. You know, I'm playing video games during the day and life is just kind of miserable for me. No one says that. You know, no one who's a teenager now pictures 20 years out that life is just an absolute wreck. You know, or maybe you're in your 20s now, you know, and you're newly married, and maybe you've got a kid, or maybe you're, you know, not yet, and that's kind of on the horizon. And I say, picture your life 20 years from now. And so you picture yourself as having moved up in your company, and maybe you're the president of your company, or maybe you own your own business, or maybe you're a partner in your firm. You know, you're married, you've got a couple of teenagers at home, you're going to football games with them on Friday nights, or you're going to basketball games during the week, and you're taking vacations with them, and your marriage is good, and you look at your life, and everything is good and positive. You know, no one says in their early 20s, well, yeah, 20 years from now, I expect that my marriage is falling apart. That I'm addicted to drugs. That my kids, they're absolutely miserable. That I've gone through several jobs and I'm unemployed. No one has that picture of their life 20 years out. Now, I'm 45 years old. So I sat down this week and I did this exercise for myself. If I'm asking you to do it, I had to sit down myself and do this exercise. How do I picture my life 20 years from now? Well, the first thing I thought of was I picture at that point all of our children are out of the house and Katie and I are able to sit down and have a meal together and finish a sentence without being interrupted. And I thought, well, that's great, I picture our two oldest as, working. Maybe both of them are married. Perhaps even I've had my first grandchild at that point or a grandchild on the way. I picture our two youngest as being in college. I picture that at that point I'm either about to or I have just passed the baton of leadership of the church on to someone else, and that the church has been very successful and had a very effective ministry and reached a lot of people in the community. I do not picture 20 years from now that my marriage is falling apart, that all four of my kids are living in the basement, that their lives are all wrecks, that the church has just kind of fallen to pieces and, nothing's really worked out. I mean, the future that I picture is one that is good and positive and exciting, and life has been fulfilling. Now, here's why I tell you all of that, and here's why I have you do that exercise. Those pictures of the future, the ones that are good and exciting and positive, those pictures do not just happen. They don't just happen. The choices we make today will paint those pictures of tomorrow. The decisions you make today will determine what kind of picture of your life that you are living 20 years from now. It's like you've got a paintbrush in your hand. And the choices, the decisions you're making today will paint that picture, will paint that portrait, and will determine what that picture of you 10, 20, 30 years from now will look like. Or here's the phrase, and this is a phrase we're going to use throughout this series. The choices I make today determine the life I live tomorrow. The choices I make today determine the life I live tomorrow. The decisions you and I make right now will determine the picture of our lives tomorrow. Now, don't get me wrong. I get it. Some people get a raw deal. And sometimes things happen to us that are completely out of our control. And even when we do everything right, when we follow all of the rules, sometimes things can happen to us that cause life to go sideways, and it's not our fault at all. Like the health nut that eats right, exercises daily, and gets diagnosed with cancer. It's not their fault. They didn't do anything to cause it. It just happens to them. And I get that. That happens a lot of times. But even in those cases, the totality of our lives are not determined by that one event. So much of what our lives look like is determined by the decisions that we make. They're determined by the events of the past. And so the choices I make today, the choices you make today, determine the kind of life you live, the kind of life I live tomorrow. Sometimes I'll have someone call me and say, hey, can I come by and visit with you for a minute, or can we meet and grab a cup of coffee? I've got something going on in my life, and I just need to talk to you for a little while. And we'll meet, and we'll sit down, and we'll have a conversation. And they'll describe what they're going through, and they'll tell me about their situation and just how awful it is and the decision that they're having to make. And one choice is, horrible, and the other choice is awful, and it just doesn't seem to be any kind of good choice they can make, and their situation is just absolutely awful. And they'll describe it to me and they'll say, so what do you think I should do? What decision should I make? And I'll think, here's the only thing I really know to tell you. you need to go and enroll in college and get a degree in engineering and then begin to work on a time machine. And once you've invented that time machine, I want you to go back in time and I want you to change those past decisions that have brought you to this present circumstance. And that choice that you talked about, I want you to change that choice. And you know the relationship that you talked about and all that happened in that relationship? See, that was a really bad decision. So change that one. And this other advice that you followed that was really bad advice, do not follow that advice. And I want you to go back and change all of those decisions. And that will change your situation now. So you're not faced with bad choice one or bad choice two. And then I'll say, once you're done doing all of that, I want you to give me that time machine. Because see, I've done the same thing. I would like to go back and change 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 or 50 decisions that I've made in the past that have affected my life today. I would like to go back and do the same thing. And you would like to go back and do the same thing and to change the decisions that you have made that have affected your life in the present and have determined certain circumstances about your life now. Why is that? Because the past you took that paintbrush and you started painting some bad strokes that have painted the picture of your life now. The same is true with the decisions that we are able to now make in the present. Those decisions will paint the picture of the future you, whether that is good or bad. Now, before you think I've gone all Dr. Phil on you and this is like a talk show about making good choices in life, this is a very biblical principle. This is something we see throughout Scripture, that our choices, our decisions will determine our future. In fact, there is an entire book of the Bible devoted to this subject. It's found right in the middle of your Bible. It's called the book of Proverbs. And the book of Proverbs was written 3,000 years ago by a guy named Solomon. Solomon was king over the nation of Israel, and he was considered to be the wisest individual who has ever walked on this earth outside of Jesus Christ. And at some point, he sat down and he wrote out this entire book of sayings and instructions and short stories about how to make wise choices in life. And in this book, there is this particular expression that he uses a lot that will be the focus of this series, that will be the focus of today and of our making decisions in life. There's this expression, and he uses it in several different ways. There's one particular verse that kind of summarizes this way that he uses this expression. It's found in Proverbs 16, verse 25. Here is what Solomon wrote. There is a way that appears to be right, but in the end, it leads to death. There's a way that appears to be right, that appears to be a good decision, but in the end, it leads to death. You may want to circle that phrase, in the end. That is the key phrase. In the language of Hebrew, the language of the Old Testament, there are several expressions or idioms that are used that reference parts of the human body. We do the same thing in the English language. If you say that she is the head of a corporation, you do not literally mean that she is this gigantic head on the top of a building in downtown, you know, wherever. What you mean is she is the leader of that organization or she is the president of the company. You know, if you ask someone to give you a hand, I hope you don't literally mean, you know, I want you to sever that hand off and hand me the hand that you've detached from your body. You know, what you mean is, hey, can you help me out with this? I mean, we have several phrases in English that use parts of the body. In Hebrew, they have the same thing, idioms that use parts of the body, and that is what is found here. In this particular phrase, in the end, it uses a certain part of the body, the back, our rear ends. And the phrase is this, at the back or at the end, at your rear end. We translate it in English as in the end. And the picture that is used is this. The decision appears to be one way in the front, but at the back, at the backside, in the end, turned out to be completely different. Like, he went and he bought that car because he thought that was a good decision. But at the back, in the end, it was a bad decision because that car turned out to be a lemon. She married him because at the front, it appeared to be a good decision. But in the end, at the back, it was awful because he was a lousy husband. A good way to picture it would be like this. Imagine that you are walking down the sidewalk. And there's a guy that's walking towards you on the sidewalk. And he's dressed in fine clothes. He's got a suit. It's a nice suit. Nice tie. White starched shirt underneath. His hair is cut short. He looks very neatly groomed. You know, his nice shoes, nice pants. And he's walking towards you. You would look at that individual and you would say, yeah, you know, he's a professional. You know, he's got some money. You know, he's probably well educated, you know, and you would come up with all of these ideas in your head to say, you know, this guy appears to be successful. Then you keep walking and he passes you, and when he passes you, you turn around and look, and when you look at the backside, you see that his coat has this big hole in it covered by a flannel patch. And the pants in the back have these rips going down, and he's got duct tape over the torn parts of his pants, and his shoes at the back are all scuffed, and at the back, instead of having nice, neatly cut hair, you know, he's got long hair, and it's all stringy and nasty, and looks like it hasn't been washed in forever. At that point, your opinion would totally change. You would say, at the front, it appeared to be one way. He appeared to be a certain person, but when I saw the back, reality told me that, no, that's different. That's not who he is. That phrase is used all the time in the book of Proverbs to point out certain decisions, certain choices we face that at the front appear to be good, appear to be wise, but in the end, the results are disastrous. There are several areas that he covers that are big areas of life. There are some decisions that we can make that are bad decisions, but it's not that big of a deal. You know, if you leave here today and you decide to go to lunch and there's this buffet and you absolutely pig out, you know, that's a bad decision and you might have a miserable afternoon because of that, or you might gain a couple pounds, but it's not going to wreck your life if you do that. But there are other parts of life, other arenas of life, that certain bad decisions can totally wreck our lives. And that's what Proverbs covers. There are several areas where he covers. I'm going to cover four. The first is this. My life is determined by choices I make in relationships. One of the first areas he covers is the area of relationships. And this is what Solomon wrote in Proverbs 5. For the lips of the adulterous woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, there's that phrase, in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Now, these two verses here are actually set in the context of a much longer story where Solomon tells this story that he observed, this event where he saw a guy, a young man, late in the evening, walking down the street, going towards this certain house, and this woman comes out and she tells the story that her husband's gone on this long trip, and she's finally dressed and she's got this perfume, and she talks about this incredible food that she has inside, and won't you come in? Won't you come in and join me? And then she paints this picture of a night they could have together, and this young man just becomes weak in the knees, and he's overcome by his senses, and he gives in, and he enters the house, and there begins the night of passion with this woman who is a married woman. And Solomon says, yeah, on the front end, it seems so wonderful and so exciting and such a thrill, but in the end, it leads to destruction. I have a friend, good friend, who for years worked for a large company, a large corporation with thousands of employees. And he told me one time that in every case where an employee is dismissed because of some reason that's a non-performance related reason, he said in every single case, it always boils down to either sex or money. You know, once they began to investigate, and once they kind of, you know, I ask all the questions, it always boils down to some inappropriate relationship or some mishandling of funds. You know, good employee, does all these things right, helps the company, makes a profit for the company, but at some point that employee decided that, you know, this particular secretary or this coworker, you know, this would be a good idea, and everything goes sideways because of that decision. The choices that you and I make today and how we will deal with our physical relationships with others will largely determine the lives that we live tomorrow. The second area of advice that Solomon covered is in taking advice, or second area of life that Solomon covers is taking advice. And on this particular area, he addressed it from a positive standpoint. Here's what he wrote in Proverbs 19. Listen to advice and accept discipline, and at the end, you will be counted among the wise. There's that phrase, accept discipline, listen to advice, and in the end, your life will be better as a result. So in the positive, we say someone who is open to criticism, someone who is open to advice, a young person who is open to the discipline of their parents, that person in the end will benefit from that decision to be open to advice, to be willing to listen to others. The negative is also true, and that is typically where we see the most dramatic results. The person who is stubborn and says, look, I don't need to listen to others. I don't care what they say. I know more than them. Everyone's telling me I shouldn't do it, but I don't care. I really want to do it. That individual is someone who in the end will regret that decision. In the end, they will regret not listening to the advice of others, not being willing to take any form of criticism. The decision that you and I make today in regards to listening to others will in the end determine the lives that we live tomorrow. The third area of life where he uses this phrase is in handling money. Look at what he wrote, Proverbs 20. An inheritance claimed too soon will not be blessed in the end. Now, an inheritance claimed too soon is an inheritance that has been in some way swindled out of mom and dad. If you're familiar with the New Testament story that Jesus told about the prodigal son, that was an inheritance claimed too soon. Although the son did not swindle it out of his dad, he still claimed an inheritance before that inheritance should have been given to him. He basically said, Dad, I wish you were dead. Give me my money now. So an inheritance claimed too soon is someone who says, I've got to figure out a way to knock off mom, knock off dad, or get the money out of them while they're still alive. In some way, it is money that is received from dishonest means or less than ethical means. So here's what Proverbs does in this area. Proverbs praises working hard and earning a good living, but compromising your values to get financial gain is one that in the end you will regret. Several months ago, Katie and I were out of town, and we were having a conversation with someone who in the conversation was jokingly talking about cheating on his taxes and how much he hated the IRS and a way that he could claim some deductions that he really shouldn't have claimed. And as he was talking about all of this, I kind of just smiled, but inside I was cringing. So I'm thinking, you know, I get it. I hate paying taxes. You know, and I'm not a cheerleader for the IRS by any means. But this is just one of those areas of life where I just believe that you do what is right. I mean, take every deduction that is allowable by law. You know, take everything that you can, but in the end, we should do what is right in that area. And I think that God just blesses that. Because any kind of financial means, any kind of financial gain that happens by dishonest means is one that in the end will hurt our lives. So the decisions that you and I make today about how we handle money will dramatically affect our lives tomorrow. And then finally, here's the last area that we'll cover today. An area where our lives are determined by the choices we make today is in the area of substance abuse. Look at what he wrote in Proverbs 23. Do not gaze at wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a snake and poisons like a viper. Again, this is found in the context of a much larger story that Solomon told about a guy who just got wasted. He drank way too much. And in the story, the guy basically says, hey, hit me. It doesn't matter. You can punch me. I don't feel a thing. And he falls down. And he's like, I'm not hurt. It doesn't hurt me. I feel no pain because he's drunk. And he tells the story of a guy who just feels like he's immortal because, you know, he's drunk on wine. And that is until the next day when he wakes up and he's feeling the pain from all of these injuries. And he's feeling the pain of the hangover from what he did the night before. And Solomon says, watch out. Be careful. The decisions that we make today in this area can largely determine our lives for tomorrow. And most of us in here can point to situations where we've seen it in others, or we can point to stories in our own lives where we've made bad decisions in this area. And life has gone sideways, and we've lost things that are valuable to us because we made a wrong decision when it came to alcohol and drugs. Again, the decisions you make today, the decisions I make today, will determine the life I live tomorrow. Now, if you walked in here and this is the first time you've ever been in church, you've never cracked a Bible before, none of this is new to you. You did not walk in and go, well, I never heard this before. I can't believe it. You know, I didn't know these things would wreck your life. Man, that's amazing. I mean, you didn't walk in and go, yeah, I thought that someone could be strung out on meth and still live a very quality, productive life. Like, I didn't know that. That's great. You know, thank you for that information. All of this stuff we know. I mean, we just know from looking around at life. Solomon is not telling us something here that's news to us. We know that these principles are true. We get it. We understand that. The problem is, even when we know that life is going to be worse if we make this decision, we still make the wrong choice. Why do we do that? That's what we're going to talk about over the next 3 weeks. We are going to talk about how to put ourselves in places where we are able to make the wise decisions, how to have certain priorities in our lives and surround ourselves with people and with these priorities that will enable us to make wise decisions so that the tomorrow you, the tomorrow me, is what we want it to be. So I'm going to leave you hanging there. You've got to come back to hear the rest of the story. Let's pray.